This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician.
Jimmy hit Austin.
My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest. It was just a way of life for me. On the sand of the colors.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It's that time of the week, everybody. P2 here. Phil Pritchett on the P2 Podcast. Coming to you from Trinidad World Recording Studios in Fort Worth, my recording studio here. Oh, listen. I know what you've been doing all week long. Since last Wednesday when the last podcast was posted, you've been out there going about your lives. And let me say, I hope you have been happy and have had a fruitful week. But back in your mind, as so many of us, you want to know where the issues are headed. The opinions, the topics. You are now adrift in the sea. The fog has rolled in. Where is the light? Where is the light in the fog on the shore? The P2 Podcast, talking about things that are on your mind, directing your entertainment lives, giving you guidance, all for free, right here in Fort Worth, Texas. Well, we are privileged here today. We've had several special guests lately, but today, folks, he returns to us. Kurt South is here. How you doing, South?
I'm doing well, Phil. Good to be back.
Man, it's been too long since you've joined us here.
It's been a while. I've been on sabbatical.
You've been writing a book.
Been getting centered, working on my autobiography.
I like it. I like the sound of this. Well, man, we had my good friend Zach Huckabee. You've heard Huckabee's record,
oh, yeah.
Came in and recorded.
Yeah. Supremely talented young
man. Yeah, man. Good young guy, man. Great guitar player. Interesting, cool record. That'll be out July 30th. And we also did a couple with our friends Bacon Fat, of course, Richard's Brothers Band in Effingham, Illinois. Just vinyl aficionados. Guys who just love music of all kinds, new and old. The ultimate Midwest garage band.
By the way, are you aware of the Bacon Fat Kurt South rivalry?
Is that a rivalry? What are you talking about?
Heated rivalry.
Is it a regional thing, a musical, artistic thing? What are you talking about?
It's just over money.
Money? Like what?
Money.
What do you mean money?
It started at Stu's wedding.
Oh. Oh, no.
They were just sitting.
So much happened besides Stu Wilder getting married.
It's pretty much a fabricated rivalry, fabricated by myself. But I think they were angry that they didn't get the gig playing Stu's wedding reception. And
well, I bet
did.
They didn't. Well, we mentioned on the podcast that the great Kurt South had played Stuart Wiley, full band drummer Stu Wiley, his wedding. I looked up at the reception. And I was surrounded by no fewer than 9 bass players. I had Blue, J.W., Blue Marshall.
Colin Keaton.
Colin Keaton, who will be with us next week. He's filling in for Blue when he goes to London. Colin Keaton was there. Your bass player, Will Hobbs, was there.
Will Hobbs was there, yes.
Hanging out.
Looking like
a rodeo
hand.
The Cobra, Corey Nick, was there.
That's right.
J.W.'s brother, Richard, bass player for Bacon Fat.
Yeah.
I was surrounded by bass players.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many late nights I've had, frantically calling people, probably you, asking you if you could play bass.
Yes.
When I needed a sub, when I needed a guy to play bass. And here I was at Stu's wedding. All along, there they were, the whole catalog, the whole Rolodex of bass players. So it was a lot of fun there at the wedding.
Kurt
sounded great.
Time.
Good time. Good times. Well, man, I was a little distressed. Of course, the passing of Michael Jackson, big topic, hard thing to avoid in the music world of late. Any blog, you know, everybody from Seth to Lefsetz, you know, sending out stuff. Talking about Jackson, talking about his legacy. Of course, all I had when Jackson went down was Bacon Fat, you know, younger guys, garage band from Illinois. Mm-hmm. Didn't know how much they had been around in the, you know, early 80s, probably not too much, very, very young for Michael Jackson. The whole time I was interviewing those guys, and they had some good points about Michael Jackson. We had a good podcast topic. But I got to admit, South, I was wondering, man, where does South come down on this? Where is Kurt South to opine, to give his 2 cents on Michael Jackson? We're sitting here, you know, of course, we had the gigantic funeral, the spectacle a while back, you know. And what do you think, South? How do you sum up Michael Jackson?
The funeral was a travesty.
The funeral was a travesty. How so? How so?
Oh, man, I'm going to piss people off.
Remember, this is a family-oriented program.
It is.
Family-oriented program. We're talking about Jackson music.
You know, I feel like Michael Jackson and his death and his funeral, the whole thing that went down, kind of encapsulated part of what's wrong with America and our celebrity culture.
Here we go. Podcast listeners, hands up. Hands up out there. Heads up. Here comes Kurt South.
And hey, look, when I was growing up, I lived right through the craze, man. And there was no bigger Michael Jackson fan than myself.
Oh, well, you can't. I mean, if you were from the age of 5 to 15, in the 80s at some point, you could not be totally... Every time we were talking about him going on stage that night at the Grammys, and he'd do a little spin and a quick moonwalk to the podium. I mean, it was just...
It was awesome.
It was, you just stood up and went, wow, did you see that?
It was incredible. Amazing. And there are certain givens when talking about Michael Jackson. One of the absolute all-time greatest entertainers, bar none.
Oh, no, there's no question. No question.
Put out some, you know, two or three of just albums that will always live. Always.
Yeah.
Incredibly talented.
But wrong with America, how?
Well, we're just so celebrity obsessed. You know, people stand out in the street crying over Michael Jackson, a man they've never met, and all this stuff. I mean,
at some point,
look, how bad is your life that you're just looking to Michael Jackson's death to give you something to grieve about? Come on, dry up and go back to work.
Yeah.
You know? that always drives me nuts.
I know.
People just holding vigils for a man who probably wouldn't even spit on him if he walked by him on the street. I think that's a little out of, he meant a ton to me when I was younger too. But my point with Michael Jackson is he was an American tragedy as much as he was a hero and a star.
Oh well, there's no doubt about that.
You know, I think with his funeral and the. He obviously comes from a family that likes attention and doesn't mind cashing checks at the expense of their children's well-being.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and say that. I mean, that's well documented that Joe Jackson, the father especially, was not afraid to use his children for financial gain.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it is coming from me now that I'm a father, looking back on the whole deal.
Right, right. Man, well, there's a lot to be troubled about.
Yeah.
And you wonder when you see, of course you... You do look back at the good times, the Thriller years and so forth. With just cause, you reminisce. You're thankful for what he gave the earth on that level.
No
and
question.
And then there's so much. And so when you see this kind of outpouring, millions of people trying to get tickets to the Staples Center, the coverage. You think, wait a minute, what are we celebrating here? I mean, he had a couple great albums. He was thrilling in the 80s. Yeah. But few would argue that he had any sort of cultural or impact in the 90s too much.
My question was,
in the aughts, you're kind of like, man, he's been gone for 20 years, hasn't he, Michael Jackson?
Yeah.
I mean, as a celebrity.
All these people who get up at his funeral, granted, there were a lot of them who were very close to Michael. Brooke Shields and Smokey Robinson.
Right, so very, very heartfelt things were said.
Yeah, but right. Man, you know, you get some of these other guys up there... I'm not even going to name names, but they're out there just getting so emotional. And I want to go, where the hell were you when Michael Jackson was being accused of child molestation? You weren't standing up next to him back then, were you?
Yeah, that's right.
But all of a sudden now, you know, they're performing at his funeral. Your iTunes sales are going to bump up, maybe get you back in the public spotlight. Yeah. That really rubs me the wrong way. I think there are a lot of people who've, even in Michael's death, take advantage of him.
Yeah, there's no question. Because it is a spectacle.
And I think his family is chief among them.
Oh, yeah.
I think his family, I just think they're a sorry group of people.
They live on him, man. I mean,
Joe Jackson taught them at a young age that get attention at all costs.
Yeah.
And, you know, Janet, she lived that to the letter when she let Justin Timberlake show her cash and prizes at the Super Bowl, which I thought was funny, but what a cheap publicity stunt. What a ploy.
I think a good point made was our friends, the Musers here, Dallas, Texas radio, the Ticket, listen to in the car sometimes on the way to work.
Greatest talk show. They're awesome.
Great, really funny. Talk a lot of sports and other things. And one of them made the point that, you know, well, who would have a bigger funeral in our lifetime than Michael Jackson? And no one could even come up with anybody. People thought about, like, the Pope's funeral, Ronald Reagan, all of them, you know, people who devoted their lives in certain ways to good. I don't know. I mean, you can, but, and it's talking about musicians, you know, the man, someone was like, man, what about Paul McCartney?
I brought him up. Yeah.
You know what? They kind of said, well, but he's,
he wasn't a train wreck. He's not enough of a train wreck.
The thing is, Jackson's popularity and fascination has really been the last 20 years of the train wreck. Yeah. That's what really lends itself. McCartney's older. I mean, maybe if he'd have died when he was 40, like John Lennon.
Yeah.
I mean, but John Lennon wasn't as big a deal as Michael Jackson. I mean, they're not even close.
No.
And so that does, I think, when you kind of make the point, it shows what's wrong with America. That is what's wrong.
Yeah.
Because it's bigger because of
the
train wreck and just the you know, sordid details and daily things that came out about his life and certainly some of it he couldn't control. I mean, being followed by the media and stuff. And then, like you say, then there's these other things he did, you know, going out on balconies and cars and TV interviews and pulling publicity stunts and the family that would keep the fires going, and then the court cases and the drugs and the bankruptcy. It just went on forever, and so as a result, he's not as beloved maybe as he just is notorious. Now, beloved by many for his dancing, for the good things.
And I loved him as much for that as anybody.
Oh, anybody. But, how can you not?
But, you know, when my wife was watching the funeral, and I was at the house just, like, doing dishes or something. And
Good for you.
And I was getting really PO'd at the whole thing. And she was like, why does this bother you so much? I said, the guy, you know, was inappropriate with children. If he had done or attempted to do to one of my children what he pretty much did to others,
right?
I mean, there'd be problems.
Would be big
problems. And I have a hard time celebrating the guy. And they're the people who say, well, it wasn't his fault. He never had a childhood. I don't care. I don't care what your reason is for being a pervert.
Oh, there's no question. Yeah.
Whatever your reason is, if you still are one and you need help. And instead of him ever getting help or people trying to give him help, they continue to push him as a celebrity and this icon.
Right.
And, you know, man, it's just tragic, and it troubled me.
I mean,
it really did. The whole thing threw me for a loop. And on top of that, there are just bigger things going on in this world that need to be handled. You know, there are people dying. Our economy's in the crapper.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things.
Wars are being fought. You know,
wars are being fought. Soldiers being killed. No one really gives a damn, seems like, when that happens.
Yeah, and you
but
wonder.
But Michael Jackson, who's just, I don't get it.
A 25-year-old, you know.
It makes my blood boil. It really does. It drives me nuts. And to take nothing away from his greatness, that was. But, man, but there's multi facets to Michael Jackson, and some of those facets were as ugly and as twisted as you can get.
Yeah.
And I'll be damned if I celebrate it.
And
you know what? You've got Jesse Jackson and
Sharpton.
Sharpton getting up there, just furthering whatever causes they have, tap dancing on Michael Jackson's grave to get in front of the camera again. That stuff, I got no time for it, no patience for it, and they're going to pay a price one day for what they've done. the good Lord you will punish them for what they're doing to in memory, quote unquote, of Michael Jackson, because it is wrong. It's grandstanding, and I just hope Michael.
Well, this kind of goes into our. We talked a few podcasts back about politics. This doesn't get into it does get into politics. You got Sharpton and Jackson.
All politics,
politics married with entertainment and celebrity, and where those two meet, man, suspicions are legitimately raised at every step of the way. You know what I mean? It kind of starts to be like, man, wait a minute, how come we're having this kind of deal? Why is that guy there and what's he doing? Whereas I don't know. There's a way to kind of. Have a family based ceremony, and there's ways to just blow it so out of the park.
Well, my question to the Jackson family would be: at what point does all this attention? Michael's dead, and you still don't get it.
Yeah,
you still don't get it. And now his poor kids.
Yeah,
you're just parading them up there in front of the Staples Center and God and everybody, and just it's sad. It really is. It makes me just bitterly angry. That people are willing to do that to children, that Michael loved children. Blah, blah. What? Okay, let's talk about what you're saying here.
Right.
Yes, he loved children, but I mean, man, it's just I felt like I need to take a shower.
Yeah.
Watching that funeral, man.
Well, sitting here with Bacon Fat the other day talking about Jackson, I was wondering where Kurt South would come down on. The legacy of Michael Jackson.
That's where I come down.
Boy, thanks for delivering. Because I mean, at least he's just going to throw it out there, give it to us straight, and hard to disagree with you, man, on a lot of those things. Yeah, you do have two things. You kind of got the memory of this great, fun, mega talented star,
mm-hmm.
but really a star that was. On and off the early part of his life, his solo career was really he had two albums, big albums.
Yeah.
And, it was really a pretty limited time. I mean, I think when people do compare like Elton John or Paul McCartney, or try to think of another big rock star, the Rolling Stones, I mean, you're talking about guys who have had many
30, 40 year careers.
Yeah. And really had a lot of success, who won't have near the funeral.
Right.
When Mick Jagger dies, or Paul McCartney or Elton John. Who have put together a body of work of maybe 40, 50 years and never, went into the, had the troubles Michael Jackson had.
Right.
Never did anything on that level, but will not be celebrated worldwide.
Yeah.
And that maybe makes you think, man, what are we,
what have we become?
It's great to say, man, he's a great dancer and entertainer. That's fine, but. Why the outpouring? All these people, is it because he was a beloved entertainer, or is it because we're all fascinated by the train wreck? Is he more notorious than beloved by the people? Well, interesting question.
Yeah. Well, and a guy like McCartney, if he dies at age 75 or whatever,
the story's
not interesting enough, because in America nowadays, it's just not enough to have been good and contributed and be married to the same woman for 30 years.
Yeah.
Granted, McCartney went through his crazy divorce with Heather Mills.
Yeah,
and all
bought
that.
Him a lot of cred in the celebrity press.
Yeah, it did. But, other than that.
We start following this guy.
Other than that, McCartney's just been a seemingly a nice guy who,
just handles himself pretty well. I mean,
that's not good enough. We got to find something. Let's catch him with a needle stuck in his arm in front of a brothel or something. That's when it gets interesting.
That's right. That's right.
So
dirty laundry.
It's not about your contributions. It's about the
allegations.
Falling off the edge of a cliff.
That's right. Well, there you go. Michael Jackson's legacy is brought to you by Kurt South.
Yes.
Straight from the mouth, as only he can.
I can't wait to read
the hate mail. That was a momentous meal. Obviously, big music news.
Yeah.
And I just felt it was wrong that you didn't get your 10, 15 minutes here on the podcast to opine on it.
There it is.
Thank you, sir. Good to have you back. Well, but on a podcast a little while back, we did talk about politics and music and the testy combining of those two things. That came to us from Eric Albers, our philosophical fan out there in the Midwest in St. Louis. Man, he sends us another email, Sal.
Man, he's gold.
Dude,
he's
sends us some good stuff. Podcast topics, very clearly outlined.
He said he kind of sets the pace for the podcast listeners.
So we're going to get into a subject he sent me recently. It was about, in reference to the aging performer. At what point, Mick Jagger's in a wheelchair with the lyrics in front of him when he's 80 years old singing Satisfaction. Is he still going to be selling out 80,000-seat soccer arenas? At what point do these guys need to come off the road or retire, if ever? We'll talk about that when we come back.
Yeah, I was not deterred, so I took up the chance. You know it's never simple, but it's good for you. Yeah, I can make you see the glory of my trade. Roses thrown at me, yeah, it's good for you. You never know the courses circumstances take, you'll never know the outcome, but it's good for you.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It's Phil Pritchard here on the P2 Podcast, coming to you from Trinidad World Recording Studio here in Fort Worth. With me is Kurt South. Good to see you, Kurt.
Hey.
Email us, phil@philpritchard.com, or call me here at the studio, 817-733-5256. You will be astounded. When you call that number or email me, I personally will get back with you. I'll call you on your phone, and then we can talk about where the band's going to come play for you. We can talk about your album that you've always wanted to make your whole life, but never had the nerve, never had the time, never had anywhere to do it. Let me tell you what. Come to Trinidad and record. Just give me a call. 817-733-5256. Let's make music. Play shows. It's what we do. Well, we mentioned our friend Eric Albers in the Midwest. We get emails from people out there. A lot of them just say, hey, man, love the podcast. Keep it up, dude. All right. Great stuff. Thank you very much for listening, everybody out there at RadioFreeTexas.org and at PhilPritchard.com. But Eric Albers, oh, man, he sends me another topic. He always sends me an email, podcast topic. Kind of a philosopher kind of guy, Studious, intelligent,
Deep thinker.
Deep thinker. He asks the following question, and I thought of you and me, Kurt, sitting here today. Maybe we can tackle this one. I appreciate you guys covered my last topic. You said to keep sending in those emails, so I have another one for you if you wish to cover. You briefly touched on this subject one time in your podcast, but I have recently seen Lucinda Williams playing live, and she had a music stand right next to her the whole show with notes and lyrics on it. I've heard about this. She would look at it once in a while she was playing and singing. I've also seen an older George Jones singing right into the teleprompter on the edge of the stage. So here's the dilemma. Do musicians ever retire, or should they ever retire? We have our own local boy, Chuck Berry, huh? Midwest legend,
great,
of course.
Chuck Berry.
Our own local boy, Chuck Berry, who at 82 years young still plays about once a month at a nearby club. Now, he's not the same as he was in the early days of rock and roll, but people come out to see him because he is a legend, not because he still does the best duck walk. So where do we draw the line between the audience's demand to see someone we are a fan of and the fact that a musician's live show has declined in its overall performance? Eric Albers. Well, South, I'm going to throw this to you, man. Chuck Berry's out there. You do start to hear about all of our old favorites, anybody from Willie Nelson to Bob Dylan, to the Stones, the demand is still there, I guess.
It's still there.
It comes out. It all comes down to dollars. It's like, if someone would still pay Nolan Ryan $10 million a year to pitch, even though he could only throw 50 miles an hour, would he still be in the major leagues?
Probably.
I mean, he would, wouldn't he? I don't know.
Do you
still get paid to do it? Well, where do you come down?
There's a couple factors in there. Number one, do people still want to see him? And number two, do they still want to do it?
It seems like no one ever quits wanting to do it. I mean, who just said, I'm sick of this? Just went Barry Sanders. The Lions
very
great.
Very few.
Barry Sanders, the Lions running back, kind of at the top of his career. He'd played 8 or 9 years. He just said, why play another 4 or 5 where I'm in decline and get really hurt? He just walked away from the game.
There's Barry Sanders, and then there's Brett Favre, who just keeps it.
But in music, who are the Barry Sanders of music? Guys who walked away, made a bunch of great. Will's Allen Ramsey. He walked away.
He made one record. And,
well, of course, he wasn't like some mega successful.
No.
He got a raw deal or something.
He's something of a legend. But,
yeah.
But he just just kind of took his game and went home.
Isn't that a Ray Wiley Hubbard song? This in this business, no one ever retires. Yeah. So there's a line like that in one of his songs that he did recently. Man, it is an interesting.
Man. I mean, people still pay to see these people. I would go see Chuck Berry. But I go in knowing that he's not going to be Chuck Berry like he was in 1958.
Is it sort of the Michael Jackson deal? They're notorious.
Nah, I don't know. I don't know with Chuck Berry.
Because they're definitely beloved, some of them.
Yeah, I mean, Chuck Berry, you're just getting to see a piece of history. It's like going to a museum at that point.
Yeah, right.
You know, when you go to see Bob Dylan, even as much as I love Dylan.
Yeah.
Or Chuck Berry or the Stones. It's like going to the Smithsonian and you're going to see, you know.
A wax figure.
You know, that flag that, you know, that flew back in the Revolutionary War. It's still ragged and faded and torn, but it's still that same flag.
It's the same flag.
It's the same deal with going to see these acts. Very few of them are still relevant. The very few of them are still making new, good music. And
hardly any.
You know, there's no question that they're not at the top of their game as far as performing live.
Right.
Lucinda Williams is on like 52, 53. It's not like she's ancient.
Right. She's a hard 50, though, right?
She just needs to not drink so much. That's her problem. I've seen that lady just stumble drunk into oblivion on stage.
Yeah.
Cuss the crowd for not following her. But that's a whole other story.
Well, you know, it's funny, man. It's hard to believe that when I went and saw the Stones in 1989 on the Steel Wheels Tour, there's a big, big comeback for the Stones.
Yeah.
They had made Tattoo You in 80, I guess.
Yeah.
Maybe arguably the last great Stones album, or a really good Stones album. Waiting on a Friend and a Heaven and Start Me Up, of course. Then they made, like, I think it was, next was like Undercover of the Night, something like that.
Yeah.
Early 80s. Then Mick and Keith kind of split up. Then nothing happened, you know? Mick did a couple duet. He did a duet thing with Tina, and he did a duet thing with David Bowie. The unfortunate Dancing in the Streets.
Oh,
Dancing in the Streets, just in the lemon yellow trench coats, just out there, Miami Vice and shaking their little butts around. Oh my God, creepy.
Oh man, that is creepy.
MTV, yeah. But so the Stones get back together for the 1989 tour, and man, I remember thinking they're gonna tour. You got to be kidding me. I was in high school, but I wanted to go. Same deal. I'd never seen the Stones. They were still gonna be out there, active, propped up on stage.
This was 20 years
ago. But I thought
ago.
They were old then. That was my point. And so I'm kind of like, and now you look at them, they're 65. This was exactly 20 years ago. They were in their 40s. They were 45.
Mm-hmm.
Which just is hard for me to get my head around. They weren't that, but they were perceived as old. It was just, it was uncharted waters for a rock band of the 60s. The Zeppelin had quit playing in the 80s. Yeah. See, about the 80s, man, after... You know, John Bonham, the Zeppelin drummer, died. What was it, 80?
Yeah,
and
81.
So they did a few songs at Live Aid and some things, Zeppelin, but they were done by 80. You know,
Jimi Hendrix was dead. Rock and roll had a hard time living through the 60s, really.
That's right. And by the end of the 70s, man, it was all gone. We talked about this as Spinal Tap, the great spoof movie. And that's the theme of that. That movie was made in the early 80s, and it was about, what if one of these old 60s heavy metal rock tried to come back for another tour? It was a joke, man. It was a gag. They were like 40. You know, those guys, St. Hubbins and Nigel Tufnel and Derek Smalls. Tap. Yeah, they were like, you know, they'd lived through the Flower People period, you know, and all those hilarious scenes in the movie of the old days. But they were trying to make another go at it in the early 80s, kind of in the hair metal era. And it was a joke. They're 40 years old. They're still prancing around on stage in tight trousers. We've got armadillos in our trousers.
Yeah.
And it was, so the Stones in 89 coming back, it was kind of that sense. But man, then they just never let up. They've toured every year since, I think.
Yeah. They haven't had a break.
Put out albums and The Who, I saw the last Who concert ever in 1989.
Yeah.
At the Cotton Bowl. That was the last concert they were ever going to play. They had made a live album called Who's Last.
Yeah.
Who's Last. You can go find it. Who's Last. The last concert they would ever play.
That was it on cassette.
That was like 1982, maybe, after It's Hard album came out. Maybe 83, 84.
I think it was 84.
They did Eminence Front, you know, on the It's Hard album. And it was over. Another example of a band that just had a... Nowhere else to go, but God, they've just toured every year since.
Yeah,
you know,
they're still doing
it. It's unbelievable.
Well, I think the older people who I've seen who are still every bit as good as they were years ago, if not better now. Like John Prine comes to mind. But, you know, John Prine is he's not really a rock and roll guy. He's much more of a folk singer. But I saw him a couple years ago. He's in his mid to late 60s.
Sound good?
Oh, he's incredible.
See, it seems like the country songwriter guys can pull it off.
Yeah.
You can be the wise old sage with the guitar, with the gray hair.
A friend of mine went and saw Tom T. Hall last year, I think. He played at, I think it was the Lincoln Theater up in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Sell tickets?
Oh, he sold it out. He was in his...
Gordon Lightfoot came and sold out Nokia.
Yeah.
Or close to it. Didn't all that...
I mean, those
that
guys, you know, Lightfoot's in his 70s. Tom T. Hall was like 82 when he did
right?
that show.
Wow.
He said that he was just amazing.
Yeah.
He said
he
was awesome. So, you know, we touched on that in an earlier podcast about, you know, at some point you start looking ridiculous. You know, it all depends. Did you build your career around just you standing up there singing your songs, or did you build your career around...
shaking
just,
your ass and
just rocking
being a
balls,
party guy.
Man. Yeah, it's See, hard. It's hard to make that translate into
rock
into
and roll.
60.
Does not age well.
No.
I think we touched on in our Rod Stewart segments just how, man, his whole deal was he wasn't a sit down with the guitar songwriter type like a Tom T. Hall or a Gordon Lightfoot or a even like a Willie Nelson or Bob Dylan. They don't look as ridiculous. You're just kind of, man, he's just up there strumming his guitar.
Elton John didn't look ridiculous.
Singing, he sits at a piano. But man, Mick, when the Stones played the Super Bowl, it was horrifying.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people, I got in some arguments with people about it. I go, man, I was embarrassed for him.
Mm-hmm.
And man, I was embarrassed for Springsteen when he played the Super Bowl recently, which some people thought he was good. I just said, man.
By the way, I've officially turned my back on Springsteen.
Oh, no. Listen to this.
Keep
Listen
going.
To this.
Keep going.
You know, we'll do a week of podcast on that. Springsteen. Oh. Well, the point is, these guys get into their 60s. Springsteen's 60. He's not as old as the Stones, but he's...
close. He's late 50s. He's like 58.
And, man, and he's a guy that could maybe strum the guitar and sit there.
Well, he does
And
it.
Does sometimes.
He does.
But, man, when he gets up there and you see him laboring to get on top of the piano...
does the knee slide.
And you see him do the knee slide and sort of hesitant to get up. It's just like, man... we love you anyway, Bruce. You don't have to do all this stuff.
You don't have to work so hard.
He wants to put out and give it all to us, and I appreciate that. I do appreciate that. But no one wants to see Rod Stewart.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Shriveled gray.
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, was your live show built around you and your instrument and your songs?
Yeah.
Or was it built around this other stuff?
A party spectacle.
And,
yeah,
you know, Jimmy Buffett, his show is a big party spectacle.
Yeah.
But it's also just built on him standing there strumming his guitar, singing.
Yeah, that's right. That's
and
right.
He can do that till he's 70, you know, or however old he wants to be when he quits.
Man, we opened for Leon Russell one time at the Executive Surf Club in Corpus. the great Leon Russell, keyboard player, guy played with everybody. Had his own solo career in the 70s. You know, played on everyone's records.
Oh, man.
Everybody,
legendary.
Every single person. So we're opening for Leon, and we get there, and he was a guy, man. That guy's still going, man. I heard Russell has in his bus and he doesn't play for that big of crowds or that much money anymore. I mean, it's here and there. He's just playing like the Firehouse and with us, or what, the night before we're there.
I saw him at the White Elephant not too long ago.
Yeah, I mean, he's got an old bus, and, man, I've heard he's got, like, a hospital bed in the far back of the bus with, like...
he rides around in a wheelchair.
Yeah, you know, the wheelchair with IVs. He, you know, very sick, but still going, which is admirable to a degree. I guess they need the money. You know, they can go out and make a couple grand a night, I guess, can't they? But, man, we opened for Russell that night. Again, this was mid-90s or something. I thought he was old then. And, dude, he came out. Of course, he didn't say anything to us, but he comes walking out. He looked like the guy on a Jurassic Park, the park owner.
Yes.
Like with the cane, except his hair was all the way down to his waist, like white. He looked like the abominable snowman.
Yeah, he looks like a Yeti.
And, dude, his monitors, he had his keyboard up there, his electric piano, and he had two gigantic wedges on either side of his head with two 15s and a horn in it, each side. I mean, just at an ear-piercing volume. He must be just deaf as a post. It was unbelievable. And then he had a laptop, just
with
a Mac.
Words.
With the lyrics. And he'd play a song, and he'd hit return, and the next song would come up, and he'd start playing. He'd sit there and read the lyrics, hit return, the next song, and he just went right through the show, man. That was the show. And I remember that was maybe my first experience actually being on a show. We were the opening band, you know. He left us like 1 foot of space at the front of the stage. The toes of my boots were hanging off the stage. Russell wouldn't move any of his stuff, you know. But, yeah, it's Executive Surf Club. And that was my first deal. I was like, God, man, you know, why didn't this guy just kind of hang it up? You know,
he's
had a good run. Yeah, you know, someone the other day said, I mean, why does Springsteen keep touring, man? He plays more and more these days. I mean, he doesn't need the money. Why does he do it? And I always say, man, I look at Michael Jackson. I'm like, man, they all need the money. In fact, those guys, the bigger they are, the more boats they have and yachts and houses in the mountains.
Yeah, they all need the money.
And ex-wives and kids. I go, man, they need the money more than me.
Yeah, I think I disagreed with you when you first threw that sentiment at me, but I think I'm coming around to your way of thinking. Yeah, I think a lot of these guys, you'd be surprised how leveraged their lives are.
Oh, man, they've just got brothers and sisters and moms and uncles they bought houses for and just,
A lot of them
riding on it.
A lot of them need to continue
to make that money. And unlike sports,
see,
that's what happens to these professional athletes. Everyone mooches off of them. Well, then they turn 33 years old in the NFL. They can't get a contract.
Right.
And these guys just go broke overnight because they're used to sending out, you know, $15,000 a month to their two ex-wives and their kids, and they got sued, and they're also trying to live their own life, mm-hmm. you know, taking their new girlfriend or whatever to the Bahamas, and it ain't there, man. I mean, they're not getting a $5 million check this year.
Right.
Whereas music, you can do it till you're 85 years old. Now, you might not get paid the same,
but you can
keep going, and I think that's what keeps these guys on the road. Let me know, you know what, email me if you can think of a classic act, a hugely successful guy that, you know, back 10 years ago or something, or 20 years ago, you could kind of walked away from it a little bit. I know people say, you know, Garth Brooks kind of did that, I guess. He'll be back, though. Wait, what's he think he's doing?
Back.
I mean, you think he's hung from his last helicopter? You think he's swung on his last rope across the stage?
He'll get tired of Trisha Yearwood hanging around.
Now there's
the
a
house.
Guy, Garth.
He'll go out
now
on
Garth,
tour.
Is he built on standing there with a guitar? Or does he think he's got to come out here and smash guitars over his head and throw himself into the crowd? And
he's got to hang from some sort of wire.
Yeah. Is Garth going to be 85 out there just being hoisted with ropes, just lifted up onto the piano to smash a guitar? Made out of paper mache.
I don't know. It'd be interesting to see what Garth does. If Garth really does just hang it up at some point.
Man, you know, Zeppelin just looks better year after year because they never reunited.
Yeah.
There's more appeal there. The Police were like that until this last tour.
Yeah.
And not that they're done. I'm sure they sounded good. The shows were great. But now I don't listen to my old Police records. I'm kind of like, whatever. Now everybody knows who they are. Now everybody's... I don't know. I don't know if it enhances the legacy or not, by just staying out there forever, does it diminish what they did in the past? Do you think it does?
I don't know.
Like if Dylan just keeps going, man, and finally he's sitting down the whole show, finally he's just got a notebook, finally he's not even singing, he's just talking the lyrics. Then you hear he has a stroke and at what point do you start to go, gosh, do you just stop listening to Blonde on Blonde?
But there's always a question of what's he going to do though? You know, these people, if they retire, what are they going to do with themselves? He still might have 20 years to live, you know? And it's unfair to say that he needs to hang it up. Well, I mean, you hang it up. Whatever it is you do with your life,
why do they keep going? I'd tell people, I go, man, because they can. Richards can grab his guitar and go out on stage, and people are just going to be so glad he's there.
Make a million bucks.
And just give him money and scream for him and let him do whatever he wants. You know, what's he going to do when he sits home? Maybe he's going to take up golf, you know? I mean, is he going to – what's he going to do? How many days – can he sit on the beach and do nothing before he goes, dude, come on.
Let's go rock and roll, man.
In their hotel room, I can trash, fire up the jet. Let's go. Well, we don't know the answer, Eric. Maybe that's all we've reached here. I don't know. The only point I would make, I think, is that, as Kurt kind of outlined there, I do think the songwriter, country man, lone man with his guitar kind of deal ages better than the rocker. The rocker who keeps dyeing his hair and getting facelifts and, still shaking his tush and trying to strut the catwalk when he's 65.
Yeah.
That gets a little embarrassing.
Very embarrassing.
So, speaking of that, who's going to play these Super Bowl halftime shows from now on? Do we just start back over at the top with whoever, Aerosmith or whoever it was first?
We've gone through them all, haven't we?
The Eagles, they going to do it this year?
probably.
Not that I'm holding my breath for any of this stuff, but after Springsteen did it, and Petty, two guys you thought maybe would never do it.
Yeah.
They both did it, and I was kind of like, man, they're kind of getting into the bucket here. There's not a whole lot of these guys out there.
I know.
Who
next
are they gonna...
Next year, Bachman-Turner Overdrive. Just up there taking care of business.
Yeah. Last year we had the Eagles. This year, Foghat reunites. Proof of the city. Oh, man. I saw the Doobie Brothers played like the Orange Bowl halftime show maybe last year.
Yeah.
That was kind of on
By
par.
The way, my brother went and saw the Doobie Brothers a couple years ago.
Oh, dude. They sounded great.
He said that he has never seen a better live band. And he's not a
awesome.
Fan of the Doobie Brothers either.
Yeah.
He's like, dude, those guys are incredible. So, hey, the Allman Brothers still out there and sound better today. Or as good today as they did 20, 25 years ago.
Well, they've re-upped. They've gotten rid of some of their
old
stock.
They've got some young guys now.
They got Haynes
still,
and Trucks. And who else is in that?
Oh,
Dickie Betts, he's not around,
no,
is he?
No, Dickie Betts. But Dickie Betts is still touring with his band.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, the Allman Brothers have gotten younger at a couple positions.
Right.
So.
Well, folks, go see them now while you can. They're out there on the road, all those dinosaur acts. Who's going to replace them when they're done? I don't know. Well,
P2
is going to replace him. Me and Kurt South, man, we'll classic rock your ass. Get out there to the AAC. Well, we're going to talk about, you know, a band who could maybe in 10, 20, 15 years play the AAC to revelry, to nostalgia, to, you know, would be a band like Wilco, maybe. You know, they keep growing. Of Wilco, man, we're going to look at Wilco's new record. Not their new one. Well, they have the new one out yet?
The new one's out. It came out...
real recently.
It's been out about a month.
But the one before this was Sky Blue Sky.
Yeah.
Man, I've always been a Wilco fan, intrigued, but always a little bit at arm's length. A lot of... I upset our old drummer Jason Stolle one time by saying it sounded like the Beatles recording in a General Motors manufacturing facility. where there's a lot of noise, hammers clanking, stuff being broken, and then some dude strumming a guitar. But we're going to take a look at Wilco, man, because when I heard Sky Blue Sky, this record, man, it was really great. I think my favorite Wilco album, it's just a complete picture. Beautiful
awesome.
Songs, sounds amazing. We'll look at Wilco, man, next.
If you feel like singing a song, and you want other people to sing along, just sing what you feel. Don't let anyone say it's wrong. And if you're trying to paint a picture, but you're not sure which colors belong, just paint what you see. Don't let anyone say it's wrong. And if you're strung out like a kite, or stung awake in the night, it's alright to be frightened. When there's a light, what light? When there's a light, what light? When there's a light, white light inside of you.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It's Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. Email us, phil@philpritchett.com. Let us know what you'd like to hear discussed. Or also call us, 817-733-5256. My own personal cell phone there, folks. Call me if you'd like to book the band. We'll come play for you anywhere. We'll work something out. Or come record here at Trinidad World Recording. Whether you're a professional musician, singer, solo, songwriter, full band, or a hobbyist, a 63-year-old dentist from Newark who always wanted to make an album, but thinks, Phil doesn't want to mess with my songs. I'm not a real musician. No. In fact, we've done it before. I've had friends of mine come in here. A couple of them were doctors, you know. Came in, we had a great time, man.
From Newark.
Not from Newark. They were from Fort Worth. From yeah.
I thought they were all from Newark.
But all kinds, man. You know, it's all music, man. And good times. So give us a call. Well, South, I'm going to let Kurt sort of lead this discussion a bit, man. This Kurt South is nothing if not an authority on all things cool music, man.
Damn right.
I get a hard time. Man, I'm just such a classic rock dude, a buzzsaw guy. But of course, you know, here in the last 10 years or so, always been a big Wilco fan. Although early on, man, in the ashes of Uncle Tupelo, my first big exposure to something like this was Trace by Sunvolt. I played with Buddy Huffman, Macon Grayson lead singer, at Woody's the other night, and Buddy, of course, a huge Uncle Tupelo fan. If you ever heard, checked out Macon Grayson, great rock band.
Oh, dude.
Oh, man, just great
awesome.
Stuff.
Awesome.
And, man, totally takes a lot of his singing style from Jay Farrar.
Yeah.
You know, the former Uncle Tupelo member. But that first album, Sunvolt, Trace, you know, walking down Main Street and getting on the concrete. Check out Trace. We'll cover that on another podcast.
Yeah, that we need to discuss.
Man, that was just a wall-to-wall masterpiece of songwriter, country rock.
Yeah.
Awesomeness.
Jay Farrar, for many years, was my number one hero.
Oh, is that right? Yeah.
Oh, man.
I mean, he was way up there, huh?
Yeah, I saw him at the Aardvark when he did a solo show.
Oh, yeah. He comes to town about once every couple of years, so he'll swing through.
And, man, don't think that I didn't try to whip him.
Yeah.
I beat him down so bad.
Beat him. Look out, Jay Farrar, when you come back
like
to Fort Worth.
I had, like, 32 pints in me, and just, Jay, come give me a hug.
Dude, you ever talk to Tweety? Man. Well, speaking of Jeff Tweety, man, he was the other
bass player
of Uncle Tupelo. Yeah. I always kind of looked at Tupelo as Tweety, sort of the ambitious lieutenant. You know, maybe Farrar's kind of the older singer guy. Tweety, sort of the guy, you know, lurking around, playing bass. But, man, starting to write his own songs. Maybe mm-hmm. hadn't come into his own fully as a songwriter band leader. So when he started Wilco, I think the first record was AM the first
AM
album?
AM was the first.
Very cool. And I just wasn't, I don't know if I just wasn't as exposed to it, that and being there.
Yeah.
And then became more aware of him, kind of Summer Teeth, you know.
Yeah.
The third or fourth Wilco album.
Yeah.
You know, and I was always intrigued. I was like, man, it sounds really cool and stuff. I just thought some of the Sunvolt stuff was really great.
Yeah.
So I just wasn't as intrigued with Wilco as I was with Sunvolt. But then Sunvolt kind of, their productivity kind of went down. They didn't make as many albums.
They broke up. And
they broke up and everything. And, man, Wilco just steamed along. They were playing tons of shows every year. You know, and you just start hearing good things about them. You know, they were just really coming into their own as a great rock band, very experimental at a lot of times,
and a huge, huge fan base. Huge.
And they were just a band you couldn't help but like.
And a lot of people don't realize this in terms of consistently drawing the most number of people.
Yeah,
Wilco's in the upper echelon.
Oh, way up there.
Of all the bands in the world.
Yeah, these days for sure.
These days. I mean, they play to a lot of people all over the world.
Oh, man, no
question.
And
I guess a good place to start with Wilco, you know, you gave a lot of the backstory.
Yeah.
They started out kind of like Sunvolt and Uncle Tupelo as a country rock entity.
Right.
Kind of the beginnings of the Americana movement.
Right.
Quickly made a right turn out of that and got into much more experimental type of music, you know. Loud guitars, a lot of weird keyboard stuff.
Well, you know, that Tupelo really is credited with founding a lot of the... I don't mean to insult a lot of our listeners out there, but, you know, there might be some people who don't know a whole lot about Uncle Tupelo.
Yeah.
Midwest, country rock. Was it their first album? Was No Depression? Is that the first Tupelo record? Or one of them? It was one of the early ones.
Yeah.
So that was you do hear the magazine No Depression was around for a long time.
It was named after
the whole scene, man. The kind of country rock scene is called No Depression.
Yeah,
was in reference to an Uncle Tupelo record. Jay Farrar and Jeff Tweety, who later became Sunvolt and Wilco.
Yeah,
yeah, I was just intrigued with them. But man, this record they made, Sky Blue Sky, a couple years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, just when I heard it for the first time, and started hearing these things on satellite radio. We had the satellite radio in the van at that time, so we heard a lot of the deep cuts off of it and had on the iPod. Man, I just was like, man, every song on here is great. I mean, just in the album has such flavor, man.
Yeah.
The guitar playing on it. It's not really the one before they did Yankee Hotel Foxtrot. Is that right, or was Ghost of Born before
Ghost
this
is
one?
Born.
But Yankee Hotel Foxtrot and A Ghost is Born, especially Ghost is Born, very experimental.
Yeah,
a lot of weird noise. Weird stuff. Sort of an acquired taste probably to somebody just coming into the Wilco realm.
But what they would do, they would take a really cool song with a good hook, good melody.
Yeah.
And it would go along for about a minute and a half, 2 minutes, and then all of a sudden it would just dissipate into a bunch of noise and stuff.
Feedback and people knocking stuff
over. And that turned some people off, but, you know, I was not nearly as big of a fan of those records as a lot of people. You know, I was much more into Being There and AM. I liked Summer Teeth.
Yeah.
Then it got a little offbeat for me, but I still really was into it. I still respected them.
You still
a lot.
Respected them, right? Because man, I tell you what, their muse, you know.
But as a live band, they have always delivered hard, man.
Yeah.
God,
yeah.
They get up there and just and they've gone through a lot of lineup changes.
Yeah.
And you know, now there's six guys in the band.
Uh-huh.
And man, Sky Blue Sky was just it was kind of. Not them not returning to the song-oriented roots, but mm-hmm. it was like a bigger, better, more badass version of them than they were when they did AM.
Yeah.
Putting a new spin on.
And I got the impression on Sky Blue Sky, maybe not trying maybe as hard to be.
Exactly.
To be pushing the envelope.
Yeah.
They just kind of, you just feel them kind of sitting back.
Just very natural.
Strumming their guitars. It's not a loud album. Just the way the guitar amps aren't.
It's almost laid back.
Much, very laid back. But man, melodic, man. What Lights, you know, that was getting a lot of radio play.
Yeah.
God, that is a great song. That just stopped me in my tracks. And I can say when I heard that Sunvolt album, Trace, that first song, you know, Tear-Stained Eye.
Yeah.
Walking down Main Street, getting to know the concrete. Just a pull the car over moment where you just sit there and... Yep. St. Genevieve, and I confess to say I just never really had that moment with Wilco on the stuff. I'd hear something cool. Oh, it's Wilco. Yeah, that's pretty cool. But man, Sky Blue Sky, when I hear it, if you feel like singing a song and you want others to sing along, just say, man, really stopped me in my tracks.
Yeah.
There's a light. What light? God, what a great song. And then they had a, you know, Walking is great.
Oh, man. The first song on the record, it starts off with a song called Either Way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's just
very laid back.
Maybe the sun will shine.
Maybe the sun will shine today. The clouds will blow away. Maybe I won't feel so afraid. I will try to understand either way.
Man, but they recorded that album in their loft in Chicago. They had like their own studio, and they just sat around in a circle. They
all facing each other.
They all played at such a low volume so that Jeff Tweedy could sing over the band, and no one used headphones.
Wow!
So that kind of gives you an idea of the feel of the album.
Yeah, don't get that sense of separation. There's not those, you know, like Summer Teeth just has a more refined, slick.
Yeah.
Punchier, solid, more modern sound to it. One of their albums that was maybe their last record on.
This one is just
Warner
as
Brothers.
Much of like a 70s folk rock album as it is.
Yeah, oh man, big time. Yeah.
But man, it starts off strong and just ends even stronger.
It really is. It's rare because, you know, certainly when we've discussed this in many different podcasts in many, many different ways, the emphasis on the single, buying per track, not wanting to buy albums. They're too expensive. No one has time for 10, 12 songs. Man, this one And people give me a lot of crap about always talking about 70s albums and stuff all the time.
Yeah.
And rightly so. But the fact is, man, it's an art form to make albums like that.
Not everyone can do it.
And so when Wilco succeeds and you go, man, well, wait, there's a new record, Wilco, a new band who's made a complete album that's amazing. Well, guess what, man? It's got the same kind of feel, instrumentation, and vibe as an older album. You know,
it's not just
going off into like some sort of, you know, dance mix pop territory or something that's just gonna beat you down. There's something about those, you know, strumming acoustic guitars, singing harmonies when you listen to an old Jackson Brown album or something, or
it never goes out of style.
It just doesn't go out of style.
It's always good.
I'm not saying Wilco is like not mining new territory. They certainly are, but to make a complete listening experience, you can't put together 12 just ultra upbeat, poppy, super compressed tracks. That maybe you'd hear on like modern country radio, which might sound great. Man, it's a cool single. I like that band's new song. But you sit there and you listen to 12 songs like that on the guy's new record, man. It just beats you in submission. Like, okay, dude, I can listen to the radio instead of sitting here listening to.
Right.
You know, this dude, this punchy, loud, brittle. You know, so there's something to be said. Maybe the album is an art form. It was fully realized in the 70s. Maybe it hadn't evolved just a whole lot.
No,
you know.
But man, that record, you've probably heard a lot of these songs on. They licensed that whole album to Volkswagen for a series of commercials. So
I wonder if they took a lot of shit for that.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, I bet they
did. They had a good answer for it, though. They said, well, you know, no one plays this on radio anymore, so we just look at that as our radio.
I'm walking.
You know.
Was that in the Volkswagen commercial?
Yeah.
Did they do What Light on a commercial? No, they had another one.
Either Way was the first one. Right. It was the first one. But the record just starts out with Either Way, which is just a great song, and it just keeps. It's almost like each song builds on the next one.
You're talking about Impossible Germany, the
Impossible
third track.
Germany is my favorite
with
song.
With the solo
on the
at the
record.
End.
Yeah, they do a three-part harmonized guitar solo at the end. It's just like an extended 3 or 4 minute jam.
I was just listening to it. It sounds like Steely Dan.
Dude,
yeah, it just has
badass.
That, yeah,
oh,
just a
badass.
Jammy, jazzy thing going on. It really does. It sounds like something on.
Well,
a Steely
and
Dan
Wilco's
album.
A band that each guy in the band. You know, they're all old. I mean, they're all in their 40s.
Yeah, late 40s maybe.
You know, the lead guitar player, Nels Klein, he's like 53,
I think. Is that right, yeah?
So these guys have been playing their whole lives.
Wow.
They're just accomplished musicians. They're just old guard guys and just know how to play their instruments. So, you know, Jeff Tweedy, who's the leader and the singer and songwriter, he always, you know, he'll say, I'm kind of the weak link in the band as far as musicians go. But, man, he's an accomplished guitar player in his own right
now.
Yeah, he
is. Oh, yeah.
And has written so many really good songs. But that album is a testament to the album as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some standout tracks, but you can sit and if you can spend 50 minutes with it, you're not going to be let down.
No.
And the way it ends, what's the name of that last track? It's escaping me. You have it up there?
Yeah, dude.
Dude, it ends with this song that just it just goes off. It's otherworldly. It's awesome.
Thanks, I get.
No.
On and on.
On and on, yeah. Just on and on and on and on. It ends with that out with that song.
Well, you know, someone once said, and wisely so, that in rock and roll, you're either a Stones band or you're a Beatles band, and they made the example that. Like REM was kind of a Beatles band. You could see them doing Things We Said Today or something like that. And man, I we were talking about in the van one time, and at least on these last couple records, I go, not only is Wilco a Beatles band, they're a White Album Beatles band. I mean, some of that stuff is just right out of
it is.
While My Guitar Gently Weeps
to
the way it was recorded, the tones, the parts that are played. You know, the way it's mixed, just everything about it has that kind of feel to it.
Yeah, no
you
doubt.
Know, but experimental harmonies, that kind of thing that maybe you wouldn't find quite as much on a Stones record where you're going to get more of the kind of the raw and real thing.
And look, the point is, if you're going to be a band like that is a little left to center and, you know, you do a lot of extended guitar solos and kind of a more jammy feel.
Yeah, yeah.
you just got to be good
to sell it.
I mean, you can't just get some guy that just beats around on acoustic guitar and hire some guys and come out like that.
Wilco's benefited, too, from being able to... Kurt and I are always, as every musician, you're always looking for a way to get your music out there more, maybe penetrate into a market or a field of recognition, so to speak, that maybe you're not currently in. You know, I mean, you said, man, I'm known around the stockyards for being a songwriter, but how do I maybe... play some festivals in Corpus Christi. You know, it's kind of a weird question, but Wilco is kind of in a rock band, and a throwback in many ways to how they record and the kind of songs they write. But, man, have always really infiltrated, man, the jam scene. Because they're not really a jam band, but, man, they have been embraced definitely by the Bonnaroo kind of type festivals and really a whole legions of ex-Grateful Dead and Fish fans out there. Can turn on a Wilco and go, man, I love them too. And they're more song-oriented maybe than more just live jam-oriented.
What's funny about Wilco is if you go to a Wilco show, there'll be a bunch of hipsters there.
Yeah.
There'll be guys in khakis and button-down shirts.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be some kind of redneck dudes there.
Yeah.
Then there'll be just, there'll be a bunch of hippies. No, a lot of women.
A lot of women.
Women like Wilco. Well, they're there with their boyfriends and husbands.
Yeah, right.
But you'll have hippies there. I mean, a lot of different people from a lot of different walks of life dig Wilco.
And yeah.
There aren't a lot of bands that just you can say that about who just really have a cross section of people at their shows.
Yeah, that's really true. I mean, it's rare you see a band so easy to like as Wilco.
And it's not because they have 3-minute pop hits.
No,
it isn't because they don't. I mean, a brief Wilco song.
I'm not trying to say that they are. I'm not trying to compare them to like Dave Matthews. Of course, they're a lot different. But when Dave Matthews came out, he was kind of the same kind of guy that had some sort of song, some sort of pop appeal, mm-hmm. appeal to the jam band kind of thing.
Right.
Toured hard, put out an album every year. And anybody from the old graybeard hippie guy to the young executive in the suit and tie could all say, man, I like Dave Matthews, and that was okay. They were just an okay band alike. Like, no one's going to go, oh, why do you like them? They suck. You can't say that because they're a good band.
Yeah.
And Wilco seems like they're getting it to that sort of pedestal.
Yeah,
and that's rarefied
question.
Air, man, to where you can just, our old drummer Jason Stolle was a huge Wilco fan, and so was his dad, who was an old drummer. They both just talked about Wilco and had their new in fact, his dad, Wilco's famous for putting a lot of noise on their albums. John Stolle, Jason's dad, said, man, I was listening to new Wilco the other day. I was driving down the road and my muffler fell off my car and it was banging around on the street under my car. He goes, man, but I didn't even notice it because I was listening to Wilco, man. I thought it was on the track. He goes, what does that say about Jeff Tweedy's new album? That I thought my car falling apart was just part of his musical vision. I don't know. Stolle forwarded me that email and said, I thought you'd get a kick out of this. Very true. Well, man, sky, blue sky. If you think Wilco, if you're out there, man, you're a country guy, Texas music fan, you maybe heard of him, maybe you haven't, you're like, man, that's weird stuff. Man, let me tell you what. Sky, blue sky.
Good place to
Wilco,
start.
Wilco, really great stuff, man. Great stuff. And I think you'd be surprised how much of the songs you've maybe have heard elsewhere and kind of like.
Yeah.
And you'd be surprised by just the warm nostalgia feel of the whole record. You just say, man, this is just why we listen to music. Stuff that sounds like this. Well, Kurt South, it's been a joy having you back here on the podcast.
Thank you. Good to be back.
After a hiatus.
Good to be heard
welcome
again.
Welcome to be back, throwing out hot music opinions left and right.
Sorry to Michael
pissing
Jackson
people off.
Fans. I'm
sorry.
Sorry
to Michael Jackson fans. Just converting everyone, man, into Wilco fans, no matter where they may be. Thanks for listening at philpritchett.com and radiofreetexas.org. Call us 817-733-5256 to book Phil Pritchett and the full band, or to come by and have a free tour of Trinidad World Recording Studios in Fort Worth. Record your band here. And as always, email us, phil@philpritchett.com, and let us know what you'd like to hear discussed on the podcast. Go see Kurt South at Fred's, man. He's still playing there every noon, Sunday at Fred's, the hipster hangover show.
Yes, sir.
And download all your Phil Pritchett and Kurt South music from iTunes. Or you can go to p2tunes.com. We'll order the drop card, P2Tunes drop card. $20, everything I've ever recorded. We mail it to you. You download away. Thanks again for listening, everybody. We'll see you next week on the podcast. For Kurt South, I'm Phil Pritchett. Take care.
Myself.
without you, what am I gonna do? I was singing this song about you. Walking, like I said.